Hi there, my name is Mary Killalea. Welcome to the To Be Bolder podcast, providing career insights for the next generation of women in business and tech. To Be Bolder was created out of my love for technology and marketing, my desire to bring together like-minded women, and my hope to be a great role model and source of inspiration for my two girls and other young women like you. Encouraging you guys to show up and to be bolder and to know that anything you guys dream of, it's totally possible. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation. Hi there. Today on the show, my guest is Sam Needham. She is head of marketing innovation at Silicon Valley Bank. She is an accomplished digital marketing leader with experience building web products and driving digital transformation. Her career stretches across companies of all sizes, from Dell and PricewaterhouseCoopers to starting her own agency, Webalicious Designs, and she was co-founder of a travel startup earlier in her career. Welcome to the show, Sam. It's great to have you here.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
This is great. I'm getting to meet you the first time through this podcast, and that's what this podcast is all about, bringing women together so that we can share our stories. So let's dive in. Tell me about your current role and everyone else, what you do.
Sure. So again, very excited to be here. Sam Needham. I have just stepped into a new role as head of marketing innovation at Silicon Valley Bank. And for those that aren't as familiar with SVB, we are a tech and life sciences bank. We bank 50% of all the VC-backed tech and life science companies in the U.S., although we always talk about how we're where innovation exists around the world. And we also, just like another stat, have banked 69% of all the U.S. VC-backed companies that IPO'd in 2019. And what I'm really excited about here is we're talking about career progression. We're talking about things that I've learned and lessons that I've had and things that I can share with others. And it's very timely because I've just stepped into this new role. I've been in the role about a couple of weeks. And my focus really ties a lot of my background together. So I started as a developer. I actually started coding when I was 15. That used to be really exciting for people. They're like, wow, 15, that's so young. And now kids are like, yeah, I started when I was 6, right? Like, yeah, what languages do you know, right? Let's compare notes, right? So so I always think about fondly of that time and being in a very privileged place to my dad owned a small web development company. And so although I really wanted to go and be a barista or work at Six Flags, he was going to pay me more. So I started learning code and Cold Fusion, and that really evolved. For me at the time, it was very much about, okay, I can create this thing and that's cool that I can do this, but why? Like what do people want? Like what do clients want? Like tell me more about the story, right? And so in school, I had degrees in marketing and psychology because I was absolutely looking for that why. And the awesome thing about my role today is it really touches on so many different aspects. It's within marketing, but it's really about how do you use marketing technology and data, marketing analytics? How do you think about the operations of how the marketing organization aligns really to what our clients need and brings all of that together?
That's awesome. You sound so passionate about it. I love your passion. What is it about marketing that gets you so fired up?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting, right? So, I'm sort of classically trained. I have a marketing degree, but I've always, I think in my heart, been a nerd and a techie. And so, over the years, I've had different dissonance with actually really even aligning myself as a marketer. And where, this beautiful place that we're at now is it's not about creating products and then getting customers to be interested in them, right? It's really about working within this ecosystem, working with your clients and your customers, really understanding their needs and helping build things that fit those needs and delighting them and building things that they didn't even know they wanted, but is really helping them across that client journey. And so, for me, the passion really comes from kind of understanding myself and what my North Star is and being able to help show up like that inside of work and outside of work.
So keeping up with innovation is challenging. Where do you turn for your learning and education to try to stay on top of things?
Yeah. I mean, we're living in a digital age where there's so much information out there. For me, I mean, everybody is learning constantly, right? And that's something that's really exciting to me as someone that, you know, has that growth mindset and loves to learn. And, you know, I go to a lot of different places for learning. I'm one of those people that really likes to consume a lot of information online, but I also have that trusted set of advisors and that people that I've, you know, manicured and curated over the years that I really can go to and have those conversations. And it's not necessarily even people that are in the same industry as me, because I think sometimes inspiration at its best comes when you least expect it or comes from different areas. And so, you know, for me, I want to be learning every day. I want to be pushing the envelope every day. I want to be excited by new concepts. And also I sort of, you know, reflect back on my early years. And I remember giving assignments like, I want to be a webmaster, right? Like, we don't have that role anymore, right? And so what gets me really excited about, you know, innovation in general, and then also just, you know, the intersections of innovation, marketing, and technology, is that, like, I want to be working on things that people haven't even heard of. I want to be working on things that also help, you know, evolve us and make us better overall.
So there's a question, which, if you had to pick two, or a one between the two, which would you prefer, technology or marketing?
Yeah, I think for me, this is an interesting question. It's kind of, I kind of think of it like my children. I have one son. He's 21, and I think if I had more children, you know, of course you don't ever want to have favorites, but when you have one, you can sort of have a favorite. I see myself much more in that multidisciplinary side where there's lots of different areas of interest. So it's hard to pick one. You know, I think what's actually more interesting is where they intersect and how they evolve together. And then I think that another interesting part about both of these areas is that they are constantly evolving and growing. If you think just about the marketing technology stack, you know, we're at 7,000, 9,000 tools. If you think about the whole stack in the ecosystem. And, you know, if you look over the last 10 years, it was like we're adding in the thousands every year, right? And so I think it just overall, it's hard for me to pick one specific area, but I do, I think in my heart of hearts, I'm a technologist that really allows problem solving through that lens of marketing.
What's been one of your favorite projects that you've worked on?
Yeah, I mean, there's been so many. I think, you know, what I wake up in the morning with is, how do I attack some of the biggest problems? Whether it was when my co-founder and I were thinking about starting a company together and looking at the travel industry and saying, you know, at the time, 10 years ago, how do you find those local hotspots and really building an application that helped with that discovery? Or, you know, if you think about, I'd say for me, when I was at Brinks, this is early on in my career, and I was 22, and I remember going to the board and saying, like, we really need an intranet. And they're like, no, I don't know if that, you know, at the time we were in like a Lotus Notes database system. And I said, no, because we need a way to connect globally. We were, I think, in around 100 countries plus. And it was like, we, you know, we really need to build this intranet. And, you know, was able to pilot a global intranet for them. I'd say, you know, recently I've been really excited about agile ways of working and how does that apply to marketing. And so that's been something that I've been moving forward in my current role. But you know, there's just so many examples. I think I've been really blessed to continue to find the space and advocate to work on really interesting projects at every company that I've been at and been able to help, you know, make significant progress forward for them and build new capabilities. I was also thinking about when I was at PwC and helping internally work on a more test and learn culture, right? And so doing user testing on the website, and then it was just so successful, I was able to bring that into future roles, right? And so it's also this idea too about when you have these projects and there's really successful elements of it, like, how do you just continue utilizing that knowledge to all your future roles that you have?
Work related or personally, Tell me one failure you've experienced and what you learned from that.
Yeah, I mean, failure is really important. I think failure gets a little bit of a bad rap. For me, you know, earlier on in my career, I was really risk averse, and the thought of, like, I didn't want to fail. It was almost like I was coming from a place of fear of failure, right? It's like, okay, I need to do everything myself. I need to know all the answers. I'm a smart person. I can figure this out. And so, I don't think I stretched myself as much, but even in my internal dialogue, right? I don't think I had as much of the understanding of what failure actually meant. So oftentimes I would go out for roles that were definitely 100% within my comfort zone. I wouldn't necessarily raise my hand for projects unless I fully felt like I could own every part of it, right? I was trying to make sure that I was setting myself up for success. And I saw that as in opposition of failure, right? It was, and for me now, as I've kind of been on this journey of myself and thinking about failure, I've actually evolved for me that personal definition, which is if you're not failing in small ways, then you're not pushing yourself hard enough. And so in that though, you have to really visualize the destination, right? You have to visualize what success looks like, and you have to also understand what failing fast means. And so for me personally, how I see that is by taking smaller stretch opportunities, or by saying, I don't fully understand this problem, but I'm willing to start to solve it, or I'm willing to put a team around it to start to solve it. Or it could also just mean I'm willing to have a conversation that might be a little risky, and that's okay, right? And then it's also having the heightened awareness that, you know, ooh, this process that we implemented or this thing is not going in the right direction. And so it's giving the time and space to actually evolve and make it, instead of just, you know, letting it go as it, you know, on the path, it's like, okay, let's make some pivots. Let's make some adjustments. Let's think about this in a different way. To just kind of give an example of that, you know, oftentimes, like, I find myself in looking at, hey, there's so many different places that the team could be focused on, right? I mean, we have so much opportunity. And so, you know, one of the areas that we've been doing a lot of work on is actually on the website, on our SUV.com site. And we've implemented this idea of experimentation, right? And A/B testing. And so we've been able to create and, you know, drive engagement on what historically was more of a big redesign project and, you know, efforts that were more about just kind of overhauling the entire site to, no, we're going to do smaller experiments. And we might not be right. When we come up with a new design, it might not be the winner. And we've been able to build and get, you know, a lot of buy-in for, and that's okay, right? And so for us, that's what we mean by failing fast, right? And to say, like, not every experiment that we've tried has been a winner. Instead, we see that instead of a failure, we see that as a learner, right? So if you see failure not as an end, but as that kind of step into, okay, that's a redirection, right? And so you know, that's a lot of background there for, you know, you and the listeners. But I think whereas earlier in my career, I saw much more like, okay, there's success and failure, and I don't see how they necessarily go together. Now I see I'm pushing for failure, but I see failure as redirection and as like an opportunity to grow. And to me, that even that mental twist, just changing my mentality has allowed me and my team to also take and try and explore in different ways that we might not necessarily have done previously.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. So how do you quiet the voices in your head that around self-doubt and allow yourself the freedom?
I think for every person, it's a little different. For one, for me personally, it was about starting to even pay attention to that, right? And to just name it and say, oh, this is a feeling that I have, or, oh, this is my reaction. One of the constructs that's been really powerful for me is this idea of story versus fact. And I've done different scenarios with people, but let's just say you're looking at, and to just kind of visualize this with me, you're looking at a big house, right? And you might look at that and say, okay, what are the stories and what are the facts? And you would say, okay, the fact is that it's two stories. The fact is that it has a front door, right? But the story around this big house might be something like, oh, somebody rich lives there. It must be really expensive. Or, you know, it's like, well, all the additional storytelling and scenarios and biases, that's really like the story. And the fact is, you know, just the things that are factual and verbatim that don't have any sort of opinion or bias built in. And so one of the things I started to pay attention to with that, you know, that voice inside is, okay, first understand it, listen to it. What is it saying? And then start to categorize it. Like, is that a fact? Right? Or is that a story? Is that a story I'm telling myself? And so just with that, and I think that a lot comes into, you know, that imposter syndrome of like, okay, you've said something to yourself, who is, especially now that we're, most of us are fully remote, you are with yourself all the time, right? You are your biggest advocate, or, you know, the biggest thing holding you back, right? And so you pay attention to that voice inside, and then you start to name it and you start to categorize it. And that, at least for me, that's how I do it, which is, okay, is that a fact or is that a story, right? And then you have an opportunity to listen to it. And what I like to tell myself is, that's good information, right? So like, you've received it, because you don't want to just push it away. So that's good information. And then it allows you to really think about, okay, what's the right, like, next step to take. So for me, that's how I use that, because I do think that intuition is important, but I also think it's important to, you know, dissect it a little bit more and be aware of, you know, the different experiences that you have and how that's going to influence, you know, your actions.
I love that. And I love the house analogy.
Yeah.
I'm going to use that. tell us about Hackout. What is it? How to get started, and how has it grown?
Yeah. So again, you know, as I mentioned, have had a very interesting career, worked at lots of sizes of companies, started some of my own, always had passion projects, and been connected to the community in between raising my son. And I think one of the, you know, so I think as I've kind of done different things around, one of the things that I've found from a startup standpoint is making sure that you have a good set of mentors, right, as you're a founder. And personally, you know, having experienced being that only, right? So I'm a LGBTQ lesbian woman. And, you know, having that only is hard enough in a circle of friends, in a small team, a leadership table. And then you compound that with being a first-time founder, or, you know, just even a serial founder. There's a lot of things going on. So one of the organizations that I've been involved in for several years is Start Out. And that is an organization that's focused on LGBTQ founders and the innovation ecosystem around them. And we started a few years back an event called Hackout. And Hackout is, in a way, like a traditional hackathon, in that you have groups come together. They pitch different ideas, oftentimes the first night. We pick a handful ideas as from the crowd, picks their best, you know, 10 to 15 companies that they're interested in creating. And then they break up into small groups, and over the course of the weekend, build that company. And so they understand and start to learn concepts of how to validate an idea, how to do client research, how to build an MVP, build a pitch deck. They get coaching from mentors. And you're doing this in a very accelerated path, just to give people a flavor of what are some of those early building blocks for a startup. And we've been doing this now for a couple of years. I'd say in the other kind of unique part about Startout is that when we were coming up with Hackout, we also wanted to make sure we created an experience. So it was more than just come to the hackathon and work with your team. So we also have several, you know, entertainment focused and just like social events around the weekend. And that has been, I think, what a lot of the feedback that we've gotten over the years is that, you know, it was really great to work on the team and learn some of those hard skills, but it was even more beneficial just to meet people like myself. Mm-hmm. And another dimension of this, which, you know, has been more important historically, being that we had this in person, is that we would provide scholarships for individuals. So we would fully pay for them to fly and stay in Austin, Texas, which is where this event has been held. And that was pulling people from Brazil, from Europe, all over. And those, some of the stories that I would speak with some of the people that attended, and it was just really powerful because you're learning about the local culture and being a queer person, whether they were out or not, and just some of the differences and being in different countries. And then you try to translate that obviously into, you know, starting their own company or, you know, somehow being interested in that. So the event's been going on for a few years now, this year, and we've actually just released the marketing materials on it, but we are going 100% digital. And the neat thing about that is we've historically had to cap the attendee at about 100 people. Just because of in-person capacity, but we're actually going to be opening up to several hundred. And so we're, if you want to get more information, swhackout.org. We just put the application on there, but it's a great event. And I would say from as someone that has been a mentor, and I've also helped with pitch prep and then also being on the organizing committee, people tend to really get a lot out of it. And we have a lot of past participants that come back as mentors or come back to share with us that they were able to actually take that idea further than just the weekend.
Ah, that's awesome. What was the address again? It was
swhackout.org.
Cool. All right. When it comes to being a professional businesswoman, what is one of the biggest pieces of advice that you've ever received?
Yeah, this is a good one. I've gotten a lot of great advice. Thank goodness, right? People really have helped me stay informed and you know, educated. I would say the one statement that I probably think about this almost every week since I've heard it is, what got you here won't get you there, right? So the skills that you learned and got you to this point won't get you to the next level. And that you've got to continue to sort of, you know, rebrand and build new skills. And I think that just means it has so many different meanings. For me, and if I look at my career, I was an individual contributor. In other words, I wasn't managing people for a long time. And I felt very strong about my digital marketing skills. I was up on the latest SEO trends. I absolutely was that, you know, overachiever, even when you think about like, okay, here are my projects that I'm working on, or here's the, you know, digital channels that I'm responsible for or whatnot at that. Then as you move into people management, you really realize that, you know, that was great that you have all of that skill, as, you know, a subject matter expert, but people management is a whole new discipline, right? And so then you start to, then it's almost like, you know, you kind of utilize what you've learned, but it's really more about the practices of how to learn that you apply into, okay, now I need to learn, you know, what does it mean to be a people manager? How can I be a really successful people manager? You know, and so that is a big transition because, and I even mentor people on this now. One of the first things that happens to a lot of people that move away from individual contributors to people managers is they say to me, and I remember feeling this, but I'm not doing anything, right? They say like, okay, well, I was used to owning, you know, this program or this project or, you know, being part of this release or doing this, you know, QA work or design or whatever it is, right? And then they're like, but now I just manage people. And it's like, whoa, we need to break that construct. It's not that you just manage people, right? Because the best managers are able to take a lot of individual people and make them better together, right? And so, you know, again, that takes a lot more almost rededication on what does it take to manage people and what do high performing teams need and how do you coach people versus just do it themselves, right? And so it's a lot of kind of good skills there. And then for me in my personal career, kind of the next step is, okay, how do you manage managers that manage teams, right? And so like, what does that take, right? And then, you know, what does it take to start influencing the C-suite? What does it take to start, you know, starting a company? It's like, well, starting a startup and being a small business owner, some similar skills, but a lot of different skills, right? And so I would say for me, the best advice, and I really do think about this all the time, is the skills that got you to here won't get you to the next point.
Great summary on that one.
Yeah.
Who inspires you? I know you've mentioned during this conversation, you've had a couple mentors and, you know.
Yeah. So I'm kind of interesting in that I feel like I get inspiration from everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm almost like, you know, a sponge just constantly absorbing information. And I'm a little bit of a delayed processor too. So sometimes like I'll go to something and then it's like months later, it'll click. And I'm like, oh, where is that? You know, I need to go look that back up. Or, you know, even things that sometimes I go away from, you know, a conversation and I was like, oh, that was a really good conversation. But then it's like in the shower, something will click. I'm like, oh, I know how I can apply that. So, you know, I don't know that I have like one person that is like that person of inspiration. I think as I've become a mom, when I was younger, I used to be like my mom, everybody was like, oh, you know, I look up to my parents. And I was like, I didn't until I became a mom. And then I was like, how did my mother have three kids, you know, and have time to have a career too? Like, it just blows my mind. Right. I'd say Brené Brown is actually somebody else that, you know, I think a lot about. I see a lot of her content. There's multiple people like that, but one of the things that I recently read that it just really resonated is she said there's lots of cheap seats, right? There's lots of places for people to not be involved in, you know, the day to day or really trying to push themselves, but they're giving you feedback, right? They're in the cheap seats and they're just commenting on what you're doing, right? And she said something, and I'm paraphrasing, but you know, there's lots of cheap seats up there, but when you're down in it, when you're really trying to make change and change is hard, like you're going to get some bumps and bruises, right? You're going to get some cuts, you know, it's not something where you can just sit up in the cheap seats for. So, that's just one of those metaphors that's kind of really resonated with me, like, oh, today I'm getting some bumps and bruises, but that's okay. Because, you know, I don't want to be, you know, in the cheap seats. So for me, I encourage people to get a mentor and really be proactive. I don't feel like I had, when I was in my 20s, I don't feel like I realized the value of mentorship. I mean, I heard like get a mentor and I was like, yeah, it's on my list of priorities, but it was like lower.
Yeah.
But I do think now that's actually something that I prioritize. And I think a lot about like, who's an advocate for me? Who are my mentors and who are my peers? And I tell people that as well, which is like, you know, who's really got a seat at the table that's advocating for you? Like, understand that, right? Like, what tables do you sit at where you can advocate for people? Understand that, right? Find mentors, be direct. I actually ask people to be my mentor now. Like, I don't sit there and wait for someone to say, oh, you should be part of this mentorship program, right? So I always encourage people, if your company has a structured mentor program, you know, understand more about that and get involved. If your company doesn't, then reach out to people. You might be surprised, right? I've reached out to people and I've never heard from them. And that's okay, right? Because it's like, okay, well, it's not the right time. I don't take it personal. It's just not the right time for them. And then through that process of just reaching out, I've been able to have some great mentors, and especially mentors that have are aligned to your North Star and are places where like you see yourself, because they can really help shortcut some of those decisions that you want. And then I also say like, really understand like who you have in your peer circle. And I talk a lot about this too, which is certain things come up and it's like, for me, example, I have people that are also in performance marketing and I'm like, hey, like, what do you think about these roles, or how are you guys structuring this? Or, you know, what's been your biggest problem, right? And so having those people at your peer level is also really helpful, because one, it does help with the imposter syndrome of like, okay, it's not just me. Like not a lot of people have this figured out, but it also just gives you additional opinions and people that you can, you know, get advice from. So, you know, I just like kind of a last point on inspiration. I didn't name this as well earlier on in my career, but it's not just about the what, it's also about the how. And so now one of my sayings is enjoy the journey. Hmm. And I didn't create that. I don't know what the origination of that is, but I really talk about like, okay, yes, there's like a destination, right? And then as soon as there's a destination, there's a new destination. But really it's about how we get there, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what does that journey look like? Are we leading with empathy? You know, are we being mindful of all the various scenarios that are going on? And especially I think now that we're working in this new normal, mm-hmm. it's really important that, you know, we as leaders and, you know, to me, everybody is a leader in their own area, that it's not just about focusing on that what, it's also about focusing on the how. And I use my mentor group quite a bit when it comes to the how, right? Like, how could we do this differently? And so just, you know, I would say probing questions like is looking for people and mentors and places to get inspiration, not just about the what, but also keeping in mind the how.
Yeah, love it. What does to be bolder mean to you?
To be bolder. By the way, I love that. I love that we're having this conversation. I think we need to have more conversations. I feel that, you know, I've used this like metaphor before. It's like when you have a candle that's lit, you know, it doesn't take anything. It doesn't take away from the flame to light another candle, right? And so it's like the more that we can have these really transparent conversations and share the wisdom and, you know, share what worked and didn't work, the better. For me, being bolder is really also sitting with what is your North Star and being unrelenting in terms of getting it. So we talked a little bit about failure and how I've evolved my position on failure. We talked a little bit about, you know, understanding the skills that you need to get to the next level. I think also sometimes asking the right questions can be more impactful than knowing the answers. So it's really just to me, it's being mindful of like, this is what I want. This is what I deserve. You know, I don't necessarily know all the answers on how to get there, but verbalize it. Like, don't tell your steering wheel, don't tell your shower head, right? Like verbalize it to people, start having those conversations, you know, and it's not just with your manager, it's with your peers. It's with other people that you're just meeting for the first time on a podcast, right? Like, so just being intentional and starting to socialize like what you want and also giving time and space for those things change over time and you get more information. And so that evolves and that's cool too. I think for me, that's how I internalize the be bolder, is just like start the conversations and just like ask for what you want.
Last question. What would you tell your 20-year-old self?
For me personally, when I was 20, I came out, right? So there was a lot going on. When I was 20. But you know, I think that, and also when I was 20 is a lot different than, you know, what 20-year-olds are facing today in many respects. And in many respects is a similar, but I think for me, I spent way too much time trying to, fit in, right. And just try to understand like, okay, well, you know, I'm different and different isn't good. And, you know, what I would tell my 20-year-old self is that's actually your superpower. Mm. Like what's different is what makes you magical and don't shy away from that. Like really embrace it and have that different opinion and speak out. And, you know, I think for me, I was going through a lot personally and also then trying to really establish my professional career. And so I also would say just like build a practice around a mental health routine. You know, whatever that means for you, you know, whether it's meditation or yoga or working out or time in the dark or, you know, traveling or, you know, whatever that means, whatever your mental health routine is for you, I would have told my 20-year-old self, like establish that now, because not only did I need it then, but you know, it's something that's just good for everybody, like for their entire life. So So I would say that. And then I would say kind of the last piece, like if I think about my 20-year-old self, is I have a very non-traditional career, right? So if a lot of people, they kind of stay in a path, whether they stay in marketing, they stay agency side, or maybe they switch into the client side, or they have kind of, you know, different similar category of company. I was all over the map, right? I worked at larger tech companies. I worked at smaller software companies. I had my own agencies. I, you know, changed. I was in professional services with PwC, work, you know, as contracting into PwC. Like and then there were moments where I didn't necessarily like understand how it all weaved together. And then when I had the opportunity to go work at SVB, it like clicked. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, I get to use my digital background. I get to use my marketing skills. I get to use the time that I was, you know, co-founded a startup. Like I get to pull from all of these different areas. And again, it kind of was like, at that point in my career, I was like, oh, I get how my uniqueness is a value add, right? So I would also just tell my 20-year-old self, or really anybody out there that's kind of starting in their career, that, you know, be intentional, be vocal, and also just understand that, like, you know, enjoy that journey, because no matter if it seems more of a straight shot or twists and turns, it you know, you just keep putting out there what you want and meeting people and verbalizing it. And, you know, not only do you enjoy it in the moment, but it'll build and build and build to that next thing.
Thank you. This has been awesome. It's been great getting to know you and meeting you today. I appreciate you being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the episode today. It was really fun chatting with my guest. If you liked our show, please like it and share it with your friends. If you want to learn what we're up to, please go check out our website at 2bboulder.com. That's the number 2, little b, boulder.com.